gang, it's Drew Man, who's a four outdoorsman. Tonight on Bob's Total Country at 6 o'clock. But three guys, we'll share their names when we get on the air, but they call themselves the Crocky Chronicle. They're the Crappy Chronicle. Sorry, we'll start with the
mistake, all right? I made a mistake. Get off my back, will you?
Well, I enjoy your mistakes.
The Crocky Chronicles.
The Crocky Chronicles.
Yeah, those guys are our first guests, actually, at 620. The Crappy Chronicles. Adam Griffith, Bart, and Waldo. I forget his last name, but that's part of his last name. They'll be on our first guests on the Four Outdoorsmen tonight at 620. But welcome, everybody. I'm here. Sam's here. Mark is here. We have a special in-studio guest just on the spur of the moment. We got Charlie Darman. Charlie, welcome to the show, man.
Hi there.
Yeah,
well, it's
good.
Darmer, but it's
well,
all good.
I write my R's like my N's, you know. But
it's Charlie Darmer, but there's no relation to Jeffrey Dahmer. That's
well, yeah, you catch a lot more crabbies than he did women. Was that women or nurses?
He was into boys.
He was into the guys.
I got the right story, but the wrong facts. Yeah. Yeah, Charlie just got off the homegrown show with our buddy Brandon over there, and. He said, I love to ice fishing. Well, hell, this is a fishing and hunting show. Talk about ice fishing. Where do you like to ice fish?
So, Lake of the Woods or Mille Lacs, I grew up blessed with the cabin in Malmo on Mille Lacs. Mm-hmm. And out of the Red Door is where I like to go out. Red Door Resort, north end there.
Good for you, buddy.
Can you give us your top three spots?
So the top three spots are over there.
Yeah. Up here.
Yeah. Down there.
Just past that ridge there.
Yeah, by the pine tree.
Yeah, we try to get up there once or twice a year. We do this show every Sunday, and people think all we do is do this show and fish and hunt for 7 days a week. It just doesn't happen. You know, Sam's got four kids, Mark's got three kids, and I have a lot of stuff going on. I got 10 grandkids and a beautiful wife at home, and we travel and do all kinds of things.
But we like to talk about it.
We don't do that much.
We talk about it.
Hey, and Stu, you carried your weight this year hunting, man.
I did, yeah. And, in fact, I got to pick that thing up. I forgot. I got a really nice buck this year, and it's having a European mount. Should be done by now, so I have to go out to the White Bear Taxidermy and pick it up and see if he screwed it up. You can't screw up a European mount, I don't think.
No, it's kind of hard to. Yeah.
Let's talk about fishing. Now, you say you got this place near Malmo, yep, off on Mille Lacs there. And tell our listeners how many walleyes you've caught this year, you and your gang, in your boat since, yep, opener through the end of July.
Okay, so with COVID, I got quite a bit of time on the water this year because work was slow.
Yep.
And we caught, so the rule in my boat is that if you hook the fish and bring it up to the surface to where you can see it in the water, you click it on the clicker, and we always have a clicker in the boat. So from opener until July 1st, we saw 1,206 walleyes.
Jeepers creepers. Isn't that something?
Wow. That's a lot.
That's the Dead Sea. They call it the Dead Sea still. I don't know about that. Good for you.
It was all the same fish.
I wonder if I've caught that many walleyes in my life. Like,
of course not.
Been to Canada my whole life.
Of course not.
You know, have a lot of, 30 fish days. I don't think I've caught that many fish in my whole life.
Well, you said your biggest day was 130 fish?
130 was the biggest
I've
day.
I've never caught that many
on
fish
Mille Lacs,
in a day.
Too, right? You know, 100 fish in a day is not heard of. Lake of the Woods is one thing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But Mille Lacs, it's like.
I had a 100-day fish, or 100-fish day, a couple years ago up in Cabotogama. A smallmouth, actually. It was crazy. Couple of pros came up for work from Missouri. I literally had to take a break because my wrist was hurting. Like, it was insane.
That's cool. So, would you like to be a professional fisherman? You love it. You love it, man.
I'm a legend in my own mind.
Are you really? Yeah, we all are. But if you've been up there for so many years, you know the lake as well as anybody, more or less. I know we got Tony Roach and all those guys up there, and Mark Schultz is a good friend of ours up there as well. We know a lot of those guys. But you must know the lake as well as those guys do.
You know, I don't think I'm a professional fisherman by any means. I go out there and I just enjoy my time on the water. I'm not trying to make a business out of it. I don't want to be I'd like to be a guide. Sometimes I think maybe I'll start the wannabe guide service.
That's a good name.
You could sing to
people.
You
could build your resume after 3 months and I'd hire you.
Yeah.
Bring the guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
Serenade people while they're pulling in fish. That'd be awesome.
I'd love it.
Out of the 1,000 walleyes that were brought to your boat from opening until the end of July, approximately how many were with live bait?
All of them.
Really?
Mostly all of them. Well, plastics, two of them. Pulsar, B-Fish and Tackle, or the Moxies. There's also a really good bait out there on the rocks and stuff.
And if you had one go-to bait that you had to use for the rest of your life, what would it be?
And Andy Walsh knows jigging a minnow.
Yeah, here you go.
Me too.
That's hilarious. We, Mark and I were just talking about that in the lobby. I said every year, you know, the father and son and uncle trip, it's 5 days fishing. I'll go to Mills or Shields and spend, Kirsten, close your ears. I'll spend like $100 on tackle. In the whole week, I'll use a gold jig.
Yeah, I know. I was the same. My old man, we had a place up, and still got a place off of Vermilion, on Mud Creek Road. It's been up there since 1961, and my dad fished up there for years and years and years. And he had a tackle box full of pool of poppers and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And all he ever
little
had
Joe.
On his, he never changed his Little Joe spinner. Never changed it. It was, you know, the leader would get yellow and you know, from being old and the,
oh, yeah.
forever. But that was his go-to. It was a lot of fun. So, how was your week, Sam?
It was good.
Busy?
It was busy. I want to do a quick shout-out. We lost my wife and my mother, or my wife's grandpa. It's my Carla's, my mother-in-law's father. We lost him on Wednesday, and you know he's in a better place. We pray for him and the family. And my grandma, or my wife, I'll consider my grandma. My grandma Jean is down here listening to the first episode for her for the Four Outdoorsmen right
hey,
now.
Hey, Grandma Jean, welcome. We only have three outdoorsmen. We can have three outdoorsmen and one outdoors woman if Grandma wants to join us some night.
Yeah, we'll get her in studio sometime. Yeah, yeah. Hey, she's shot a lot of deer.
Has she really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but can she clean a deer?
Sure.
Can she skin a deer?
Sure.
Then she knows a lot more than I do.
Oh, yeah.
That's the truth, man. As a matter of fact, I went squirrel hunting a couple of days ago, and I got a couple of squirrels on my son's property. And I didn't realize, you ever shoot a squirrel, hunt it, it's a hard, they're not that hard to shoot if you find them. Man, to skin them, you have to have a knife that's a lot sharper than what I have.
I laughed out loud.
It was brutal.
So, Stru, we talked about this last week about squirrel hunting. And so, Stru being Stru, went squirrel hunting this week,
absolutely,
right?
Walk in the woods, you bet.
Text us a selfie picture with him and the squirrel he shoots. And about a half hour later, we get this picture of a skillet on a stove with about a half dollar size worth of meat. And he goes, either I suck at cleaning them or there's not a lot of meat on a squirrel.
Yeah. I didn't do a very good job, man. And what I had was good. But
I laughed at that hard.
Yeah, it was. Go ahead, Mark.
Last time I went squirrel hunting, I've cleaned a lot of squirrels in my life, but you know, when you get to watching YouTube and stuff, there's got to be a better way, right? So I watched this video in depth about how, you know, you make a slit, you step on the tail, you pull it all in one go. It looked so easy. I'm like, I'm going to do it like this. Made a slit, stepped on the tail, pulled, ripped it in half.
Yeah. I tried it as well.
Yeah, it's a mess.
No, so
the old stepping trick works for pheasants. Have you done that?
No, I haven't.
You lay them on their back, spread their wings out, put a foot on each wing, and grab their legs and do a little shimmy. Pulls the body right off.
But
I only go to places that clean them for me.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
But when you're my size and you're about the same size as the animal you're trying to skin, whether it's a squirrel or a pheasant, you haven't got much of a chance, pal. Now, you're the guy who's got to stand on that tail and pull the rest of the body up.
Yeah, but my hands are so big, it's hard to hold on to those little legs.
But I'm gonna, I just bought my license. I've never had didn't have a small game license this year, and it's good through the end of February, I think. Well, I got time, but I just enjoy being outside. Now, what do you enjoy doing besides fishing, Charlie? And working, you own a block company, right?
Yeah, concrete cutting and drilling company.
The first pair of hockey skates I had were CCCs.
Okay,
yeah, that's what they used to call them. I forget the real name for it. They
CCMs.
Oh, CCMs. Yeah, I got the right story. The wrong
not the details.
Back then, they could have been CCCs.
That's right.
That's Russia, I think. Right?
Yeah.
CCP.
What do you like to do, Charlie?
Outdoors. I suppose go out west with my dad, go snowmobiling.
That's a good time.
All
fishing.
Right.
Fishing's my thing. I don't hunt either.
Do you use your snowmobile fishing? Is that how you get out on the water?
Yeah.
Are there trucks right now in Mille Lacs or not quite yet?
On the south side, yes. Not on the north side. The Red Door Resort pulled out our house. Great, great experience. Great people up there at the Red Door, definitely.
Boy, are they going to pay
plug.
Us for this or
little
what?
Plug.
Man? But, yeah.
Oh, boy.
I got some CDs up there, you know. So.
Yeah, by the way, this show is live tonight from 6 to 7, then goes podcast on Tuesday, so you can contact the people from Red Door and say, listen, man, listen Tuesday. Go to mybobcountry.com or go to the Four Outdoorsmen website, and you can find this show on Tuesday or any other shows as well. It's a lot of fun.
And then just give us their email. We'll send them a sponsorship
package. Yeah. We need a place to stay once in a while, and we'll still be talking. But
tell us a little bit about your ice house. So they pull it out for you. What kind of house do you have?
It's an 8x17 All Seasons Explorer ice castle.
Nice.
Ice castle.
Got a TV in it?
It does.
Nice.
When I bring it out there, yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
I took the Otter Resort and put a bed in that and been staying in that out on the lake. I saw Trick Your Trap on Facebook. Them guys do some pretty cool stuff, and I think mine turned out really good, too.
Good for you.
It's a lot of fun to stay in ice camping. Ice cramping is what I call it. It's pretty cramped in there.
Sure, you did some ice cramping.
Yeah,
tell
speaking
us about
of, speaking
that.
That's
of
a
that,
good term.
Ice cramping, that's a lot of fun, because a buddy of mine in Blaine, Mark Peterson, shout out to Mark Peterson, my friend over there, and he built a Quonset hut, he calls it. I call it an igloo. And literally, he's got 20 hours into this thing. And he had to do it all by hand because on this little lake he's on, they won't allow them to have snow blowers or any kind of motorized vehicle. So he's doing all with shovel in hand and pack it, then go dig it out, whatnot. And so he and I stayed there last night. We had a campfire for a couple of hours. Neighbors came over. We BS'd, had a lot of fun. And it was 20 degrees. Wasn't bad in there at all, but it was interesting. So I stayed in the Quonset hut. But I tell you, I'm a small guy. I'm 5'7", 155 pounds. It was hard for me to get in it because they had to crawl on your belly. You had to crawl on your belly to get into the thing. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And someone like Sam would be...
I'd make my own door.
He'd make his own door.
You worked really hard trying to get us to do that. I don't think I'm ready for
that. I think
that.
You're ready, yeah. I can pull you out. I felt like it was coming out of a birth canal this morning at about 6:15. You know,
that's I picture Sam getting plugged into it like Winnie the Pooh in a tree hole.
Getting
like,
honey.
Yeah. We've got to pull him out by his legs.
But I had two sleeping bags and one was inside the other that Mark has. They, you know, they're good till 60 degrees below zero, whatever it was.
Your sleeping bag was inside Mark's sleeping bag?
Sort of, yeah.
All
sort
right.
Of, yeah. We were spooning, you know.
Go on.
That's no pillow, but it was a neat experience. Had a lot of fun, and I got up but the bummer part of it is about 4:30, I woke up like I normally do every day, and I usually stay up, you know, but I got to use the men's room. It's God's men's room today, you know. But I think if I have to put something on, crawl out of this thing, come back at 4:30, I'm going to be so awake, I'm not going back to sleep anyway. So I laid around till about 5:30, quarter to 6.
Fighting pee the whole time.
Oh, absolutely. Thinking, this is stupid. It's stupid. But I did it, and I left there about 7. I took a nice walk. It was a beautiful morning. And took a nice walk, and Mark still wasn't up, so I crawled back into the Quonset hut 3 times, making noise like a G.I. Joe, hauling all my stuff out. I put his gear away, and I called and texted him. I said, I'm on my way home. He got up about 8 o'clock. He slept 9 hours in that thing.
How'd you sleep?
I slept pretty well. Actually did pretty well.
You should have woke up and did
He's like Elf. I got a full 40 minutes.
I got a full 40 minutes. You should have done the horn that you did up at the Boundary Waters that last day.
That one, yeah, to wake him up.
I was waking up by Stru doing that in the Boundary Waters, very loud.
Yeah, I tell you, someday,
it's kind of nice.
If you like to BS and have a beer or something, join us at Willie McCoy's. We'll tell you the story about the Boundary Waters with him and his in-laws. They're all nuts. They're all crazy. And after we got done, we come back, and Sam says, he's going to go next year. I says, probably not, pal.
Mark's coming.
He's coming.
Yeah. You guys, yeah.
Maybe I can play some music at Willie McCoy's.
Yeah.
That'd
probably
awesome.
Could. There's no. It's all outdoors, but this is the last night.
You can go indoors.
Everything
now,
opens
right?
up indoors, right?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh,
that's cool.
We'll see if we can sneak in there tonight.
Nah, probably not. We don't want to get him in trouble. We want him to open.
That's true. I didn't say that.
You know, I saw my favorite. It's got to be one of my favorite Facebook posts today that I thought was funnier and very creative. I have no idea who even sent it, but it said something like, and I sent it to you guys as well, or I posted it and shared it, and somebody said, I bought an egg and a chicken from Amazon. I'll let you know what happens. Do you get it?
Yeah. See
what came
first,
the chicken or the egg? Well, I guess if you got to explain the joke, it's not worth anything, is it? But I thought that was really creative. It's a lot of fun. Mark, what's going on?
Hey, we got some shout-outs. Should we do that?
Yeah.
Because we have lots of guests tonight. Thank you, everyone, for writing in. If you want to get on the radio, all you have to do is comment on the Four Outdoorsmen shout-out post every week, which I post about a half hour for every show. Our first shout out is Bill Katz of Katz Cover. Says, hey guys, listening at home, making some covers. Thank you, Bill. Chris Winkleman has a bunch of pictures, all sorts of stuff, and she's correcting us that it's Arrowhead Outdoors in Ely. We said it wrong about 40 times.
Oh, I'm a left-handed pole up from the east side of St. Paul. Chris, give me a break, but I understand. Arrowhead Outdoors, great bait shop at the east end of town, Ely, Minnesota.
They got some pictures of big crappies, 30-inch Laker caught in 12 feet of water during breakfast on Basswood. Jesse Koskinimi says, beautiful day up north country doing some shooting. And Craig Rudolph Jr. says, made 200 pounds of venison summer sausage yesterday. Wow. That is a lot.
That's a lot.
We got to do a little, we got to say a little thank you to those guys. They are pretty, you know, regular on the shout out. So we appreciate all your support and looking forward to your posts every week.
For sure.
Hey, if I don't sound like my heart is in this show tonight, you understand I'm leaving for Laughlin, Nevada tomorrow morning for 4 days to golf. So I'll do my best here. I'll pretend like I'm really interested and excited about being here, but I can't wait to get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning and get my butt out of town.
Are you going
to
try and call Lyle, the 94-year-old who shot that deer?
Yes, he might be down there. Lyle Slauson. Yeah,
yeah, he's in
Laughlin. 94 years old. He shot a deer 84 yards with a crossbow.
Wow.
With a crossbow.
Unbelievable.
And I tell you,
the beaver.
We're gonna refresh this story because it's worth talking about, and thanks for bringing it up. We was talking to this guy. He's 94 years old, lives in northern Minnesota someplace by himself. He heats his house with wood, and he cuts all of his own wood every day and cuts his neighbor's wood as well.
Wow. He has a thing, all the churches around in the couple counties call Lyle if any of their parishioners would ever have a tree fall. They call Lyle, the 94-year-old man, to come and clean up the tree, cut it up, and he brings it home for firewood.
He drives to Laughlin every year by himself. He's on absolutely no medications. I tell you, it was just
a
fun story.
Maybe an aspirin today. That's what he said.
Lyle Slauson.
Nickname out of the military, the beaver, because he would cut trees down. And the average guy, what did he say, cut like 75 to 80 trees down? He would cut 200 trees down by hand a day.
Wow.
That's a man's man right there.
Doesn't happen today.
Did you meet, like, the guy who founded Laughlin or something? You have some story?
Well, I've met him, yeah. We're not best friends or anything. We don't play racquetball or anything.
You're not staying in his penthouse?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying racquetball, you know.
Yeah. His name is Don Laughlin. He's from either Owatonna or Winona, Minnesota, and he's the one that built Laughlin, Nevada.
That's crazy.
And in order to make Laughlin, Nevada successful, he had to convince Nevada and Arizona that he could build a bridge between those two states. He'd pay for the whole thing himself and want no money.
And didn't he start out by a slot? He bought a slot with one used slot machine and then carried on from there?
And he started out with slot machines in Minnesota. Back then, it was not illegal, but it was not looked on with a lot of reverence if you had slot machines in your bars and whatnot. And his parents, every bar had a couple slot machines. His parents loved to play the nickel slots, and he saw how popular it was, and he bought one when he was in high school, put it in some other place, and bought two, three, four. Before he knew it, he was making good money, and the principal of his high school said, "You know what, Donnie boy, you better get your grades up because you're not going to be here very long." He says, "I'll tell you what, I make a lot more money than you do. I'm out of here." And he went to Nevada, and that's a true story.
Yeah.
Yep, that's a true story.
Listen to this, kids. You know, you don't need school, right?
Just get into gambling. Just gamble profusely. It'll all work out.
Gambling, booze, and women. Yeah, that's a great story as well. But looking forward to that. So I've got some – and my wife just can't wait for me to get out of town as well. But
I leave tomorrow.
I'm leaving tomorrow morning.
Is Bob going?
Nope. Didn't ask Bob this time.
Oh, sorry.
No, it wasn't my setup. This is kind of fun. I like to organize things, and this is one time I'm just going along for the ride. I'll pay my few $100 and tell me what to do. That's what's fun for me.
It's going
to
drive you nuts.
It is. Anyway,
well,
so.
Well, who do we got on tonight?
We got on the Crappie Chronicles. I told you the three guys who have the new podcast, and they've already done six shows last couple of weeks, whatever. They're going to be on talking about their deal is they can catch the biggest crappies in the state of Minnesota within 60 miles of the Twin Cities.
Perfect.
And they've done so. And we got my buddy Billy Moles, modern day mountain man. He's going to be on second at 6:40. What's up?
Before we go, Charlie, you want to tell the listeners how to check your music out?
It's on Spotify or YouTube. Drilling Holes is the name of the album. All about ice fishing and Drilling Holes, Charlie Darmer, YouTube, Spotify, or any other major music platform.
Thanks for being here, Charlie.
Thank you guys very much.
Appreciate it.
Yep, be right back, you guys. Thanks, everybody.
You're listening to the Four Outdoorsmen, part of Bob Outdoors.
The Four Outdoorsmen love Devil's Lake. Right now, it's all about ice fishing, and here, there's no walleye slot limit, and keep five a day with 10 in possession. And pound-for-pound jumbo perch are about as much fun as any fish you'll ever catch. With 165,000 acres of water, Devil's Lake assures you social distancing, and that's not going to be a problem. Hey, Kurt Walbeck of Outdoor Bound TV says, Devil's Lake is easily one of my favorite fishing hunting destinations. Wow. Check out devilslakend.com, and thank you.
What does that ski-doo feeling sound like?
Woohoo!
Whoa, dude, I love that thing.
Oh, that was awesome!
Hey, let's go again.
Yeah, it sounds a little something like that. And now you can get that Ski-Doo feeling during our Winter Celebration sales event on now. Visit Power Lodge in Ramsey and get up to $1,000 off select 2020 Summit 850 E-Tech models. Offer ends January 6th, 2021. Restrictions apply. Customer offers vary based on creditworthiness. See dealer for details.
40 years ago, Dave Gens had an idea that would change the sport of ice fishing. The Fish Trap Flip-Over Portable Ice Shelter, providing protection as well as mobility to anglers. Today, the concept remains, but the original clamfish trap has evolved, made with premium thermal fabrics, heavy-duty tubs, and easy-to-use pole systems. After 40 years, there's still only one original fish trap. Watch the full story at clamoutdoors.com.
If your furnace or AC rolls over, it's time to call the top dog, Dazeal Heating and Air Conditioning. With fast emergency service, when you call, we come running. Our experts are well-trained and lead the pack in residential furnace and AC repair and replacement. We always listen and work to assure your family's safety. Plus, easy available financing means there's no runaround. Dazeal Heating and Air, the homeowner's best friend. Serving Wright County and the West Metro. Online at DazeelHVAC.com.
No boat show in 2021? No worries. Open Water will be here before you know it, and you can still claim your 2021 build slot. Trade in now and reserve your custom 2021 model for a spring delivery. Alumacraft, Ranger, and Lund fishing boats. Godfrey, Lowe, and Ranger pontoons. Don't miss the mark. Get your build reserved today now while you still can. Call 763-576-1706 to order yours today. Visit PowerLodge.com and check out the huge selection, or visit Power Lodge in Ramsey, Brainerd, or Mille Lacs.
Hi, this is Jeff Jones from your No Repeat Workday, and I want to tell you about MyPillow again, like I have been for 5 years, because for 5 years, I have finally been sleeping the way that I should have been the first 30 years of my life. I have been sleeping more fully and waking up feeling more refreshed ever since I laid my head down on a MyPillow. Part of why I love these things is they don't go flat, and if you happen to be a drooler like me, they're machine washable and dryable. All you do, put them in, pop them out, and they're back to normal. And I'm telling all this because the beginning of the year is the perfect time to try out something new. Right now, you can get a queen-size premium MyPillow regularly $69.98 for only $29.98. I mean, that's a $40 savings. Kings are just $5 more. And they will, of course, come with their 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, enter the promo code Bob, and you'll get this incredible offer. Remember to use the promo code Bob when you go to MyPillow.com, or you can call 800-606-7812.
The IRS doesn't mess around. If they want your money, they'll take it. They can take your paycheck and bank accounts too, even threaten your home or business. Don't take on the IRS alone. If you owe back taxes, the smartest thing you can do is call Optima Tax Relief. The experts at Optima specialize in a powerful IRS tax assistance program called the Fresh Start Initiative, and their clients that qualify are saving thousands, even tens of thousands. One call starts the process to stop the demand letters, stop aggressive collection actions, and stop the IRS from targeting you. But don't delay. It's important to act now while you still have options. Optima is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau. Optima has already resolved over $1 billion of tax debt for their clients. Get your life back. For tax help you need, for tax help you can trust, call Optima now for your free consultation.
Call 800-574-9188. 800-574-9188. 800-574-9188.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Total Country Bob FM.
This man I am, I'll take when I can. That man loaned me. Right now I am free. Laid off, no work, no long days crawling in dirt. Boots on, no shirt, spend my nights killing my thirst. Long time, moonshine, all eyes on the end of my line.
There you go, there you go.
Tied down, can't swim, I'm never doing that again. Ice cold, short pulls, back and forth on drilling them holes.
Charlie Darmer, is that Charlie? It must be Charlie singing that song. It's all about fishing. And the reason we're talking about fishing right now is because we've got the Crappie Chronicles on.
Good job.
Now we have three guys here. Who am I going to be speaking to first?
Whoever you want to.
You guys got to figure it out. Whoever. We got to tell you. Here's the Crappie Chronicles. There's three guys involved. You guys have me hooked, by the way. It's a lot of fun. Matt Waldo, of course, they call him Waldo Walgren, and Crappie King, I call Adam Griffith, my buddy, the Crappie King, because I still believe, I don't care what Adam and Matt can do, I think Adam Griffith is the Crappie King. The other guy is, well, they call him Fart Bart, Adam Fart Bart, Bartusek. Yeah, so yeah. I got to ask Fart, I have to ask you, Bart, how did you get the nickname Fart Bart? Come on, be straight with
me
now.
Guess.
I'm going to guess.
That honestly, that happened like 2 years ago from a guy named Alex Perrick, and I don't even know how it ever got started.
Well, I think we do. Hey, welcome to the. I'll start out with Adam. Adam Griffith first, because he's the only guy I really know on the show here. But I've known Adam for 7 years now, ever since we started the 4 Hour Outdoorsman, and he's been a good friend of ours for a long, long time. But he is the Crappie King. How did you guys start the Crappie Chronicles, Adam, and whose idea was it?
Well, it was Bart's idea. He actually gave me a phone call. He talked to Waldo, and then he gave me a phone call and said, "You want to be a part of this?" And I said, "Absolutely." And he told me the whole idea of it being within 60 miles of the metro, and just the whole story behind it. And I liked what I heard, and I joined in.
Attaboy. Hey, Bart, and I'll tell you, that puts a lot of pressure on you to kind of put a diameter, mileage diameter on your show, and that's what you're going to try to do is catch the biggest crappies. You guys say that we can catch the biggest crappies in the state of Minnesota within 60 miles of the Twin Cities. How did you end up with that mileage? Why not 30? Why not 50? How did you come up with 60?
To be honest, 60 was just kind of a round number. I just thought of like an hour. Yeah. Generally, you know, hour driving 55, 60 miles an hour. So 60 miles, that was kind of generally it. It wasn't really looking at any lakes or anything to make sure we could hit them. To be completely honest, I think of our 5-6 episodes so far, I think a majority of them have been filmed within about 30. So we haven't even been pushing it that far outside of the cities.
So, Waldo, how did you end up with these two guys?
I grew up fishing with Bart and fishing tournaments against him, and with working at Vex, I got to know Griff really well through that and through tournament fishing as well.
As a matter of fact, I think you are down. Are you in Alabama right now? Is that where you are?
That's right.
I'm in Alabama, Bart.
Okay, Bart, what are you doing down there?
I had a bass tournament on Saturday on Lay Lake. Down in, I think that's Columbiana, Alabama, and now I'm up in Florence, Alabama, going to fish Pickwick tomorrow.
Good for you, man. Good for you. I've watched all 6 episodes of the Crappie Chronicles. What's fun about it is that you're all local guys. No one's technically a professional fisherman, I don't think. I know Adam's got a full-time job, and I still think you're with Aluminum Craft down there someplace. Aren't you, Adam Griffith?
Nope, I switched jobs, but
okay. You're still working?
Still working full-time.
There
so.
You go. And so I listen to all of these. I've listened to all of them. They're all about 25, 30 minutes long. They're not going to take the entire day. And they literally are blowing me away. The last show that I saw, you were fishing the backwaters of the Mississippi someplace and having a hard time catching the big crappies. But one of you guys, it might have been, I don't know who it was, caught a 1-pound, 7-ounce sunfish. That's a big sunfish. Mm-hmm. And you're shooting for crappies. That's crazy.
Yep. Yeah, that was actually filmed on a lake on that one.
Okay.
But, yeah, the bigger crappies we've caught, Waldo's big one and then Bart's big one were both filmed on backwaters, and then the big one I got was filmed on a lake.
When you talk about backwaters, tell me exactly what you're talking about. How much square footage, how many acres are you talking about under normal circumstances?
Varies.
Yeah, it varies, but anywhere from probably, 20 acres to...
100, 200 at most.
Yeah.
And some of them.
Yeah, they've all varied largely. I mean, all those places have been completely different, too, and quite a distance away from each other. Some have current, some are completely landlocked. They've all been pretty different.
So there's a whole lot of lakes and backwaters and rivers within 60 miles. Is your goal to never fish the same place, to do a show on the same body of water twice?
Yep.
Yeah.
And well, that's. I think you can do that, right? You can do that.
Oh yeah, right. For sure.
Yeah.
There's plenty of them around.
Places where you might be able to get an 18, though. The list gets short fast.
Yeah. Are you guys overwhelmed? Okay, this has been 6 weeks. I know you got a couple thousand followers already. You got great sponsors, good content. Is this more work than what you guys anticipated?
Oh, for sure.
Adam and I had to do this once before, but we only did a couple episodes of it. It blew up, but we only did a couple episodes. But after the last couple weeks of doing it, it's definitely a lot more work than I thought it was going to be for the duration.
That's coming from the guys who aren't editing it.
That is true.
So, yeah. It's been a lot of work, but I kind of imagined it would be. It's been nice to get a little bit of a bass fishing break here down south for me.
I bet.
In terms of editing, but there'll be another episode this week, and then once I get back, we got a few more episodes to hammer out. And I know a few of them people are going to be pretty excited about. The goal is to just keep raising the bar. So
yeah.
It's been, I wouldn't say overwhelming. I mean, it's been great. Like, been really pleased with the support, and just want to make it bigger and get more people on board.
Hey guys, Mark here. I just want to say I love the content. It couldn't be more hit more home to me. I have three small boys, and I try to take them out fishing as much as I can, but that usually means in the metro and for crappies and panfish. So, you know, I love watching it because it gives me ideas on maybe some places I can go. And you guys know the stigma of, you know, the metro area, there's no big fish, but I love that you guys prove that you can find it if you work for it. Are you guys just using kind of your network to figure these places out, or is it like a true adventure where you go places you've never heard of or never tried before?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, we used resources for, I think, two shows, and the other four, we pretty much did our own research and never fished there before. We didn't have any preconceived notion when we went there. We just kind of said, all right, let's go do it. And we just did it. You know, we covered water until we found them, and then, you know, you look for the right ones, and once you find them, you kind of stay in that area and just kind of work that area until you look for those sweet spots, you know. But
yeah, the whole concept, the whole concept of it too is when we started this, and when I reached out to Griff and Waldo, we had all talked about, we firmly believe that the biggest crappie, like the top tier biggest crappie, lives in the Twin Cities area. There's really big ones up north. You can get into a ton of, you know, 14 to 16s, but you just never really hear the 17s, 18s. Those are kind of in the Twin Cities area. And there's just this belt of, like, lakes and rivers and backwaters, it seems, that they reside in. And, a few of the episodes, Griff and myself and Waldo have looked at, whether it be Lake Finder or Google Earth, and you figure out places you want to go. There's a handful of times we've struck out, and I've shown that in a couple episodes. Can't show it all the time because it gets boring, but we have struck out. But yeah, I think over half of the episodes have been on brand new bodies of water, and there will be some really familiar bodies of water for people soon, like places that a lot of people have probably seen and fished before.
What do you guys think grows the big crappies in the metro? Is it less pressure where they just have the chance, or do you have to have specific conditions? Because we all know those bodies of water that produce a lot of fish, but none of them tend to get that big, probably because they're taken out of the water. But what do you guys, what kind of bodies of waters do you look for that would produce large fish?
Usually we look for genetics, you know, first. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yep, genetics always first, and that plays into fertility of the lake. That also helps.
So yep. Genetics, as in there's a history of larger fish?
Well, that, and then, yeah, you know, it has, they've been catching them there for 40 years of this size, you know what I mean?
Right.
But you got to make sure the lake's fertile. If it's, a lot of these clear, rocky lakes, they're not fertile like these farm ponds or these farm lakes or whatever. The fish grow about as twice as fast on these fertile lakes as to the unfertile lakes. So a lot of times those fish that are on the unfertile lakes don't have the chance to get that size. They just not. That's not going to happen.
Hey, we're talking with Waldo and Fart Bart and the crappie king Adam Griffith. They're the Crappie Chronicles. and they have a podcast. They've done six shows already, and I've seen every one of them. The last one you guys just put out, you're fishing the floodwaters of some place. Again, it's got to be the river someplace, and it's only 5 feet deep, and you guys were catching. You didn't catch any monsters this time, but you caught a bunch of 11, 12s, and maybe a 13 once in a while.
Yep.
Do other people, are you coming up with people who are following you guys, or do you see people there who know these areas as well as you guys do? Is there that much competition out there?
Not really.
Not there. We're the first.
No, not there. We were the only ones back there.
Well, how come no one else knows about it? Who are you guys?
Just doing the research, you
Atta
know.
Boy. Atta boy.
Reading the DNR assessment, seeing what they got in there. Knowing how to understand them is a big thing, too. I mean, if you don't see the potential where there's no... When they netted that lake, you don't see any bigger fish. You see 8, 9s, you know, when they net it. But you'll find these ones where you'll see they got a 15, a 16, and you're like, okay, they can get that big in there. So there's got to be more than just the two they caught, you know, or the five or whatever.
You know, I think one of the...
If you see in the description that it says fish are growing quickly, I would say it's worth checking out, basically. You don't even need to see in the... netting that they got a big one. If it says the fish grow fast, there's probably big ones there. They probably just didn't net one.
All right.
And yeah. What I think Griffith talked about before too, I think part of the reason the crappies get so big in the Twin Cities is there's just so much bait in terms of stunted, like bluegill, shiner, mm-hmm. just smaller minnow populations and bugs. And then also with it's so important to release, you know, 12 or 13 plus inch crappies, I would say. But what the Twin Cities does as well is so many 8 to 10s get picked over that those ones that get through just can grow to crazy big status.
Good, Mark.
And they're super smart, too. I mean, you will watch them in the camera, you know, and you'll see them come in on your Vexar and stuff, and they just act differently. And you'll notice the more noise you make, the less you see them. So
I suppose especially
they know you're there, and once they kind of know you're there, the big ones will kind of just vacate the area.
I suppose in 4 feet of water, too, you can't, you know, find them right after you drill a hole. You got to give them a little time to come back, I'm assuming.
Is that right, because you almost hit them in the head when you went through the hole.
Right. Well, we have about 2 minutes left. Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about what we could see in the future for Crappie Chronicles, where you might be going, and do you have any big teasers for any episodes coming up?
What I would say is I don't want to give away too much because also I know there's other great shows out there doing awesome stuff, and I just don't want to put my blueprint out there, I guess, before. But like I kind of mentioned, there will be an episode coming up where you will know the exact lake we're on. It'll be very popular, and I don't think there's been a show filmed there. And if there has, it's been a very long time.
How many shows do you guys? How many?
That will be coming out and will be happening soon. We've had to wait for ice to get safe out there. It just wasn't safe for a long time.
How many shows are you guys putting out? One a week? Was that what your plan is?
Plan is somewhere in the 8 to 12 ball, or in the. Well, what am I trying to say?
I don't know. 12 range.
Is what I had originally thought of. It's probably going to end up somewhere around 10 to 12.
Good for you guys.
Because we haven't quite done everything we've wanted to do yet.
Well, I love your enthusiasm as well. You're just like little kids when I see you guys bring stuff through the hole, especially when there's areas that you haven't fished before, and the excitement actually comes right to me as well. It's a lot of fun. Crappie Chronicles, just look up Crappie Chronicles. You're going to find it, and they've already done six. Catch up on all of them. You'd really appreciate it. So it's a lot of fun. Thanks for being on the Four Outdoorsmen, you guys.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, keep having Thanks some good having success. Us. We're going to spread the word and look forward to having you guys on again.
Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Sorry. Bye.
Bye-bye. Boy, you got to love a guy named Fart Bart, don't you?
I was waiting for my opportunity to say, does Waldo ever get lost? And then the other two, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
That's
I
good.
It.
Yeah. We're going to be right back with Billy Moles, the modern-day mountain man. True man here for one of our favorite fishing destinations, Devil's Lake, North Dakota. With plenty of guiding services, you'll have every opportunity to catch your limit of walleyes or jumbo perch, or both. Find out why Devil's Lake has earned the reputation of being the perch capital of the world and also being ranked one of the top 5 fishing destinations in the United States. It's great fishing, hotels, restaurants, and great people. Hey, go have some fun. Book your trip by visiting devilslakend.com. Thanks.
40 years ago, Dave Gens had an idea that would change the sport of ice fishing. The Fish Trap Flip-Over Portable Ice Shelter, providing protection as well as mobility to anglers. Today, the concept remains, but the original clamfish trap has evolved. Made with premium thermal fabrics, heavy-duty tubs, and easy-to-use pole systems. After 40 years, there's still only one original fish trap. Watch the full story at clamoutdoors.com.
Tired of losing your valuables down the ice fishing hole? Our friend Bill Katz with BK Outdoors LLC has the most simple, affordable solution on the market. Katz covers are a strong polycarbonate hole cover you can stand on and fish through. Your phone, electronics, keys, kids, and pets can now be safe with this simple solution. Go to katzcovers.com. That's KATZKOVERZ.com. Made in Minnesota, a veteran-owned company, you can order yours directly or visit one of Bill's great retail partners to get yours now.
Crystal Welding in Maple Grove is your Hinneker snowplow dealer. Hinneker's Quick Hitch and Trip Edge systems makes removing snow easy. Made in Minnesota, Hinneker plows are perfect for commercial or residential use. Have a bobcat? No problem. Hinneker makes a plow for that too. Crystal Welding in Maple Grove also services all makes and models of plows and salt spreaders. Go to crystalwelding.com.
Crystal Welding gets the job done. No jobs are small because we do it all.
USLBM, one of the largest building products distributors in the U.S., is hiring carpenters, assemblers, sales representatives, and drivers right here in the greater Minneapolis area. USLBM offers a competitive starting wage and a generous benefits package. Apply at USLBM.com today.
Total Country Bob FM.
Hey, Brandon, there's something on the radio. There's something on the microphone.
Yep.
Oh, no. Oh, never mind.
That's a big bear. That is a big bear.
That's my fault. That's Billy Moles, I'll tell you what.
I thought something was getting screwed up, too.
Yeah, no, I screwed that one up because I told Brandon to play something like that, and I gave him a couple of different options, and he played that for Billy Moles, the modern-day mountain man. Hey, Billy, hang on just a second. Mark's got something to say.
Yeah, just want to do another couple quick shout-outs here. A great one from Jason Euchre. After hearing all the talk about spearing last week, I was inspired to show my son the sport. And yesterday, we went out in Wright County, gotten five. Pictured is him with his first, a 32-incher. That's awesome. We're glad we can inspire someone to get outside and make some memories.
This show reaches a lot
of
people.
That's what this show is all about. And Chris says, back to school tomorrow, teaching gunsmithing at Pine Technical and Community College. Thank you, Chris. And thank you, Jason, for writing in.
Yeah, our next guest is Billy Moles. He's the modern-day mountain man. And until Billy Moles was on the show about 6 years ago, he didn't have any clients at all, man. He didn't guide anybody until he was on our show. Billy, how you doing, friend?
Yeah, pretty good, man. I think I'm going to send you the bill for my administrative assistant ever since I've been on your show, man. It's been a nightmare trying to keep up with the phone.
Well, you have a very, very pretty administrative assistant, as I can tell you that. But, hey, thanks for being on the show. I'll tell you, the segment, the thing we just played, you were with the gentleman from Sweden or Germany, I think. I forget who it was. You got the brown bear. And down in the bottoms, you know, and you guys were breathing so hard. What was going on, man? That was freaky.
Yeah, we'd spotted this huge, huge grizzly bear. We were up in northern Alaska in the Brooks Range, and he was headed kind of towards our camp, and he was kind of walking sort of crosswind, and he was going to catch the wind of our camp. We were about 2 miles away from camp, but he was only like 500-600 yards away, and so we were in a hurry, obviously, to kind of catch him into the brush, but I didn't want to risk him, you know, winding our camp, because then we'd probably never see him again. And so it was just, we were shaving the margin pretty nip and tuck, and we just caught a glance of him. We had a little a hole in the alders that he was able to take a quick shot. Unfortunately, Jaime was a very good shot. He was a Spaniard.
Okay.
And, yeah, made a couple of good hits. He had a single-shot rifle, and that was a huge, huge bear. He was at least 20 years old, so that was probably about 650-pound true Arctic grizzly bear. They don't get much bigger than that one. That was one of the best, I would say, trophy animals that I've ever guided for.
We're talking with Billy Moles. He's with Billy Moles Adventures. He's an Alaskan guide, of course. If you're a listener to our show, you've heard Billy a number of times, and thanks for taking the time to do that. He's a guide in Alaska for 20-plus years. And if I recall, Billy, I've seen all of your videos. This one was called The Perfect Hunt. Is this the right video, The Perfect Hunt?
Yes. I don't think so.
Oh, we'll just say yes anyway.
Different one. We actually were hunting out of the same camp, okay. And we shot a bear right basically about the same size, just one E squared, 1 inch smaller. That one that I believe, anyway, is the one that you had the soundtrack of. That was squared 8'3", and that one on The Perfect Hunt squared 8'2". And that one on The Perfect Hunt, we stalked that bear. He was 4.7 air miles, direct line of sight from our camp.
Wow.
And so basically 5 miles from where we spotted him from. So, yeah, that's one of the cool things of Alaska is the enormity of it. And it's amazing the amount of terrain that's there. It's just so vast and it's so very humbling.
Oh, go ahead, Sam.
I was just going to say, Billy, did you get the weight on that bear? I don't know if you just said that, but...
The second bear, that would just be an estimation. But yeah, I would say they were both of them. I would say the second bear that I'm talking about, probably 550 pounds would be my best guess. You know, these are interior grizzly bears. We're on the north side of the Brooks Range Mountains, so we're in the Arctic Ocean watershed, so there are no salmon. The coastal bears, the brown bears, grizzly bear, brown bear, same thing. It's just a difference of where they live. Those coastal bears, a giant will be about, can be as big as 1,500. I would.
Wow.
Imagine. I've never weighed one, but 1,000 pounds easy, but a real giant, 1,500 pounds, wouldn't surprise me at all.
Was it just you and the other gentleman, or did you have more guys with you?
Yeah, with the Spaniard there, it was just he and I, and then on this Perfect Hunt that Strewman's talking about there, we had a kind of a guide in training packer with us to help us along, so that was pretty beneficial on that hunt as well. But generally, most of the hunts, it's just one-on-one, one hunter, one guide.
That's what I was going to ask. So what's your strategy once you approach this animal? Like, you got to get it back to camp. I mean, do you try and do it, and do you have a goal of how many trips to get it back in it to your camp?
I don't know. Yeah, no, I'm not much like a goal man. You know, each scenario is different, so you just got to play off of the strengths and, you know, the time and the terrain and what it's like. Like all the ungulates, the sheep, the moose, the caribou, we're packing out 100% of the meat. Brown bears, grizzly bears, wolves, wolverines, we don't have to pack out the meat. That said, I have eaten some grizzly bear meat. I'm not a big fan. I mean, I've eaten it before. So, like on those bears, we went and packed out the meat. They have trichinosis, the old adage, you are what you eat. You know, those bears, they're eating berries, willow buds, that sort of thing, but oftentimes rotten flesh. And nothing goes to waste. You know, I mean, a bear carcass like that, I mean, the chances of it surviving or being there a couple of weeks are basically nil. Something's always going to eat it. So yeah, we usually don't take the meat from brown bears and grizzly bears. Black bears, oftentimes you're required by law, and that's oftentimes very good meat. But yeah, all the ungulates, we take 100% of the meat there. Like with a moose, you might be talking, you know, 10, depending how tough you are and the people that you're with, you're looking at probably about 700 to 800 pounds of meat, and you got the cape and the antlers, so you got darn near 1,000 pounds to pack out. So sometimes it can take days.
Billy, it's Mark here, and this is a weird question, but have you ever had a trip where the person was just a total weirdo and you're thinking to yourself, I got to spend a week in Alaska in a tent with this person? You ever had that?
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple. Matter of fact, I'm working on a video project right now. Kind of the loose title of it is Hunters and Shooters. You know, you get some of these guys that come there like they're there to hunt. You know, they want to experience everything. And I think the worst guys are there. They're just there to shoot the animal, nothing more, nothing, you know, nothing less. Right. They don't care about anything else other than just shooting the animal. Those, honestly, that's the worst because you just kind of feel like you're just a piece of meat. You know, you're just kind of a means to an end for those kind of guys. And they are they're no fun to spend any time with because it's almost like I've had only a couple of guys in 23 years of guiding that have been that way. But yes, it does happen. But by and large, the guys that I've guided, you know, 98% of them, they're, you know, you walk away. I mean, probably better than half the time a guy leaves and you give the guy a hug. You know, you get to know somebody so well and you form a bond. And so most of the time it's very enjoyable, but it definitely happens.
So, Billy, I want you to be honest with us here.
Yeah.
Those guys that are a little sour, do you work them harder?
Yeah, well, there's what we call in the industry a discipline hike, or my old boss used to say when if a guy needed some reproval, he would say, "Willie, show him the sign." And so this one hunter, he came back one day, he's like, "Ralph, they showed me the sign." And another hunter asked, what are you talking about, the sign? I've been hearing about this sign. And he said, the sign that says Moscow, 2 miles. So basically, you just take them on a long discipline march, and then usually they kind of shape up and they listen to what you have to say. So, yeah, it's been done before. Every guy's got to pull that trick out of the hat once in a while.
I was going to say that also, you know, the discipline march also will make them fall asleep right away when they get back in the tent, so you don't have to listen to them.
Well, that's why I like guiding hunters a lot more than fishermen. At least, you know, in hunting, you can go on a hike and you can say, "Hey, you got to be quiet. There might be something up ahead." guiding fishermen was way worse.
Yeah. So
you
Billy, you'd never want
you were busy.
You'd never want to hunt for fish with me.
If you're not catching fish, you got to listen to them all day.
That's funny, Billy. You just got to tell those kind of guys, it's not the destination, it's the journey. Remember that. We're just not going to shoot an animal. You're going to be involved in the whole process. And that's one of my favorite sayings, and it came from you. Hey, I'm going to ask you to be a little bit redundant here, because when I was at your house a couple of weeks back, and thanks for inviting me in for a cup of coffee, we were talking about one of these hunts, and it was one of those. I still can't comprehend how you can see a bear from 4 miles with all the equipment they have. They need to do all the tracking. And the one that was down in the alders, I'm not even sure whose it was, but you had somebody help you a mile away with the tarp and the piece of paper thing. Would you explain that? Because I never even heard of that, and I think it's a simple, intelligent, wonderful way to help someone like yourself get a bear.
Yeah, that was on that perfect hunt, or that's the hunt that was the subject matter of a video that I titled Perfect Hunt. Yeah, okay. So me and the hunter, we spotted this bear the night before. We spotted a couple of different bears. This is, yeah, you got about, do we have about 4 minutes for the story?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So so we had this packer with us, so he was instrumental. So what happened, this bear's in this flat, brushy valley, so we hiked 4 miles to get closer to the bear. So we're still a mile away. We found this little hill, and that we were able to relocate the bear, at which point we left the packer there with a blue tarp. And then that was kind of our signal that as we're stalking the bear, we could look back at that blue tarp. And then the packer would move a white game bag. The game bag represented the bear. The blue was a constant, so that would never move, and that's where the bear was when we left the hill. And so the packer would move the white game bag as the bear moved, and then the packer himself would represent our position, me and the client, as we snuck into the bear. And so as we sneak in, get close to this bear, he really didn't move too much, but it was nice to be able to look back at Doug, who was still a mile away, and make sure that we were in the right direction of where this bear was. Meanwhile, there was a second bear that was about a mile away, and if we didn't get the first bear, the bigger bear, we were going to go after the other bear because he was fully mature. So long story short, we sneak up along this riverbed, and you get along that river, well, then the river, the water is cool. Well, then that creates different swirling winds, and so those big bears, that's kind of their alarm system. Any bear, but the big bears know it more than the rest. And so we sneak in close to this bear, and we know we got to be close. We saw him once, but he kind of just slipped through the brush, and so we sneak up in. We know he's got to be there. We look back at Doug, and Doug is basically holding on to the white game bag, so we know that the bear's got to be right in here. But it was so brushy, and so I just told my hunter, like, "Are you ready?" And he said, "Yep." So I squealed just with my mouth, and then the bear just stood up out of the brush. And fortunately, the hunter made some good shots, and we were able to collect this bear. So we get up to the bear meanwhile, and all of a sudden, here's this other bear that's just kind of walking right beside us, and he's got his mouth hanging open. He was about 300-400 yards out. He's up on a ridge, and he's looking down on us with his mouth open. We're like, what in the heck? This is just odd behavior. Everything in nature happens for a reason, and I'm trying to figure out, why is this bear doing that? He sees us. He's not running away, but he's walking, like, with a purpose, and he kind of walks right on past us. So long story short, we packed the bear back to camp. That night, the outfitters that I work with, pilots, they fly in, and we're kind of celebrating, and we're talking about things and, you know, the hunt and, you know, just a beautiful evening. And then they were talking about these DIY caribou hunters that were about 10 miles away from our camp and how a couple of days earlier they had a grizzly bear come in camp and steal their caribou meat. And all of a sudden, boom, I realized that's what it was. And I asked him, I'm like, so where was this caribou camp? And they pointed it out. Here, when we shot the first bear, we were directly between the second bear and that caribou
camp. That's interesting.
So that second bear heard our shot, assumed that the caribou hunters had shot another caribou, and he was on his way to their camp to go have an easy meal.
Amazing.
So it was just, that's kind of why I titled it The Perfect Hunt. It was just the scenario, the people involved. Everything was just so fascinating. We learned so much. It was a great hunt. Shot a great bear, great people. It just doesn't get any better.
You never quit learning, Billy. I know that every time you come back, you've got something new that you've just learned, and that's what keeps you interested in being an Alaskan guide. But now you've done something as well to expand your repertoire, your horizons, and you're doing a YouTube video. I think it's called Trust the Guide, if I remember, and you're telling stories about some of your hunts, but also you're incorporating your faith into some of those YouTubes. Talk to us about that, would you?
Yeah, so ever since I was a little kid, growing up on the farm, trapping, just being outdoors, trapping, hunting, you know, I had all these childhood dreams and these goals in my life, which were to become an Alaskan hunting guide, make movies, do some writing, hunt in Africa, hunt New Zealand, hunt Eurasia, you know, somewhere in Russia or Asia, something like that. And I've been able to do all those things. And you know what? I did all those things. And you know what? Billy Moles was absolutely no different. It was almost an illusion. But I think it was part of the process that I had to go through to really, I guess, cement my faith, my Christian faith. And so Trust the Guide, yeah, it's... you know, I've had all these campfires and with hunters, and a campfire is basically like a hunter's altar. You know, hunters, men, you know, hunters, anybody, you get around a campfire, particularly one-on-one, you know, and it's amazing what we'll talk about in that kind of setting. And over the years of guiding hunters, I've realized that every man has problems, every man, woman, you know, everybody has problems. Everybody has insecurities, weaknesses, you know, just and goes through hard times. And, you know, Trust the Guide. The guide that I'm talking about and Trust the Guide is Jesus. And I'm trying to kind of, I feel like the torch has been passed to me to some degree. A lot of people that I've come along in my path that have helped witness to me and have shown me the light of Jesus Christ. And I feel that the only thing that, you know, other than, you know, providing for my family and witnessing to them and being a good father and a good husband, the only thing beyond that that really has any real meaning to me is to try to be a light for others. And so that's what Trust the Guide's all about.
I'll tell you what, Billy, we got to let you go, but this is, I've watched all this stuff because we're friends and I respect you and I love you as a person, but Trust the Guide really does make you think, you know, and it's fun seeing you at a campfire all by yourself, and it's in his backyard, and if he had pretty good weather so far doing it as well, and tell stories about some of the hunts, but also bring in your Christian beliefs at the same time and share that, and it takes courage, and I respect that, and based on the number of followers you have, a lot of people feel the same way, and I'm so proud of you. So thanks for bringing that into our lives. But also, if anybody wants to get a hold of Billy Moles, look at Billy Moles Adventures or the Modern Day Mountain Man and YouTube Trust the Guide, you'll be impressed. He's got videos. He's got books. He does seminars. He does it all. Billy Moles, thank you very, very much for being a friend of the Four Outdoorsmen.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity, guys. You guys have a good night.
You take care of yourself, sir.
Yes, sir. Have a good night.
He's a good man. Billy Moles is a good man. He has spent 8 years in a tent.
Wow.
8 years. He's a special guy. Hey, thanks, everybody, for being joining us in the Four Outdoorsmen. Drew Man Sam, Brandy Behind the Glass, and Mark Lukey. And Mark always has something to say.
Get outside and make some memories.